I'm going to leave you with this one. I'll leave you with this one. Next week, same place, same time. CKUT, not a bunch of FM. Roger Moore, take it one or two for that. See?
This summer, I'm going to avoid spreading COVID-19. It's easy. I'll wear a mask in crowded places. If I have symptoms, I'll self-isolate and do a rapid test. If I test positive, I'll stay home for at least 5 days. And for the next 5 days, I won't visit anyone who's at risk. I'll avoid social events like festivals and gatherings. And I'll limit my activities to only the most essential, all while wearing a mask and staying 2 meters away from others. The virus is still out there, so we have to be careful. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune into the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Yes, rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number. You weren't a man. You want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
Oh, the law. The law. When they hang...
around Montreal, there are quite a few, especially on the North Shore. And let's see, what was the rest of the question?
I was mostly trying to understand if being part of getting access inside the prisons helped to answer some of these bigger questions you had around what's happening inside.
Yes. Well, like I said, my family member only did a couple of months of provincial time, and Open Door has helped me to see the effects of long-term incarceration and how difficult it is. And people can become institutionalized after only 1 year. They lose the ability to make choices for themselves. They lose the ability to open doors by themselves. You know, they always have to stand there and wait for somebody to buzz the door open. And then they get out of prison and they stand in front of a door and they expect it to open. And they realize, oh, good Lord, I have to open this door by myself. And, of course, there's all the difference between prison skills and social skills. In prison, you have to, you know, have a tough guy image. You have to not let your emotions show on your face. You really can't get to know people. You just, what they say, do your time. Don't make friends. Don't trust anybody. And of course, when you come out into the community, these are not skills that you need. You need to learn to make friends. You need to trust people. You need to tell people what's on your mind. You need to show your emotions. And so at Open Door and the other programs that we have with Communitas, we help to re-socialize these guys to make sure that they have the right skill set to become, you know, fully functional members of the community.
So let's back up a little bit and help me understand the structure of Communitas and then what Open Door is specifically.
Yes. Okay. Well, Communitas began in 1999, but it wasn't called Communitas back then. It was called Montreal Southwest Community Ministries, MSCM, which isn't a very catchy name. Mm. And it was started by a prison chaplain named Peter Hewish. He was doing prison ministry inside as his job with Correctional Service of Canada. And he realized that there was nothing on the outside for English-speaking inmates. They would just come out and they would be alone. And the shock of, you know, coming out into the community and being on your own, having no resources, practically was a guarantee to be sent back for recidivism. And so he started this up in 1999. And Open Door is only one of the programs the Communitas has. We have, like I say, we're largely, a lot of our work is social. We have Open Door, which is every Tuesday evening. And guys are escorted out of the penitentiaries with a citizen escort driver. Other guys come from the halfway houses or the community if they've already moved into their own apartment. The volunteers are there. And we have guest speakers and coffee and cookies. And the goal is to help these guys, like I said, relearn their social skills and also to introduce them to everything that the community has to offer them. So as the Open Door coordinator, I organize guest speakers, I organize activities, and we've had everything from politicians and athletes and artists and business executives and death experts and animal trainers and you name it, we've had it. Last week we had a Ukrainian who talked to us about what's happening in Ukraine right now. So it's very informative, not just for the inmates, but the volunteers also keep coming back. So that's Open Door. That's every Tuesday night. We also have, at one point, we realized that we had a lot of guys who were kind of dangerously isolated. And we knew that Open Door once a week wasn't enough for them. So we started a second program, which was called Table Talk. And that was Friday lunch. And that became so popular. You could barely even move. The room was so crowded. All these guys coming together and volunteers as well, just to support each other, because isolation is really one of the things that kills a person when they come out. If you don't have a crime-free environment, a crime-free social circle that you can count on. So that was really another one that we had. And unfortunately, Table Talk and Open Door and everything else has gone virtual over the last 2 years. And when we first went down in 2020, when we first went online, I thought, oh no, if this pandemic lasts for 2 months, this is going to kill Open Door, because people just like the human contact so much that there's no way we'll survive on online. But we did, and we've been going strong ever since. And more volunteers keep coming to us, and new guys come out if they know how to use the technology. And we fill the screen. Sometimes we have two screens of volunteers every week at Open Door. And now we're starting to open up again. So we actually had 2 full years on Open Door, two years to the day. And now we're gradually going to be reintroducing physical Open Door downtown by McGill Metro.
That's awesome.
And boy, are we ever looking forward to getting together again. No. And then we have other programs. For example, one of our programs is Circles of Support and Accountability, which is for high needs, high risk offenders. And so there are some guys that come out and they actually need more of a structured following. And so what we do is the guy himself is called the core member. And then we'll sign up like 3 or 4 volunteers to be the circle of support that this guy needs to support him and also to keep him accountable. And the goal is no more victims. You know, let's keep you on the straight and narrow. Let's make sure that you're never isolated, because isolation, like I said, is one of the big factors that leads to recidivism. So if we make sure that this guy has always somebody to phone, if he's feeling bad, if he's feeling lonely, if he's feeling shaky, if he has problems with his parole officer, then he's going to have a circle that's going to be able to, he'll be able to talk things through like that. And so that's Circles of Support. We also have reintegration circles, which are for guys who are not so high risk, but still maybe they have a long-term incarceration, or they're a little bit shaky with drugs or something like that. And so we just call those reintegration circles. And so they're for people who just need a little bit of help in their first 6 months or a year or whatever. But some of our circles will go on for 10, 15 years. If this guy really finds that it's helpful to meet with his circle every 2 weeks or once a month to really just unload, it's kind of like your therapist visit once every month or something. It really, really helps. Mm-hmm. And so we have a lot of success with those programs. And then other programs that we've had, of course, we still go into the, well, online during the pandemic, it was online, but going into the chapel every second week for Bible studies. We also had film night. We have a newsletter that guys write for called the Sou'wester. So we and then we bring students in and we say to our students, what program, what projects do you have? Suggest a project to us. You know, you're new, you've got an area of interest that we don't know about, suggest something to us. Mm-hmm. So we're always getting into new projects. They could be experimental projects or they could be something that goes on for a long time.
Are most of the students with you there volunteers, or most of your volunteers are students?
Well, actually, no, our group is between age 20 and 80. In order to join with Community Ask, you have to be 18 mm-hmm. or older. Yeah. And yeah, we have volunteers in their late 80s. We go to the volunteer fairs every year, or we did before the pandemic. There's kind of like the general way we've always done things, and then there's the pandemic way we've always done, that we learned to do things. But we go to the volunteer fairs at McGill and Concordia, and people see that we are a little bit different from all the other community groups that are there. And so we managed to nab quite a few. And then our volunteers go through an orientation and a training process, because it's a rule of Correctional Service of Canada that all volunteers have a certain amount of core security training. And so we put them through that, and then we deploy them and say, all right, what would you like to do? You want to join this program? You want to suggest a different program to us? Would you like to write for the newsletter? What would you like to do? Work on our website, accompany guys, go into prisons. A lot of students want to go into prison and say, it's like, wow, what's the inside of a prison like? Mm-hmm. I found out early in my life, but yeah. Other people haven't.
Yeah, and I think it's, we know, like, even from a pedagogical standpoint, like, experiential learning is so influential. And I think there's, like, a really big tipping point that happens for folks when they are able to, like, transfer knowledge from maybe hearing about prisons or learning about sort of what a, like, terrible institution the carceral system is, and then when they actually go into the building or in onto prison grounds, and then things become very real. I think that can be really, really influential.
Yes, and also of course when volunteers come to us, a lot of the time the only exposure to prisoners that they've ever had has been through the media, and so of course a lot of them have these really horrible ideas of what prisoners are like, and then they come to Open Door and, well, you don't know who's who. We don't differentiate people at Open Door saying this guy's a volunteer and this guy's an inmate currently incarcerated, this guy's an ex-inmate. Everybody is the same. So you don't know if you're talking to somebody who's doing a PhD at McGill. You don't know if somebody's a drug importer. You don't know if he's a chaplain. You don't know if he's just a member of the Kiwanis Club. You don't know if, you know, he did an armed robbery or whatever. We work with federal inmates generally. So it's 2 years plus, 2 years and plus as a sentence. But we have had provincial guys come to us. I mean, if they need support, hey, we're open to them as well. Mm-hmm. But what people like at Open Door is you can't tell who's who. Everybody is the same.
Kind of jumping off that point, I wonder if you could pull out some of sort of like the guiding values or principles that you use at Open Door. Sort of what's like the backbone behind what you're trying to create?
Okay, well, one of the principles we have, of course, is volunteer safety. And so our guys are kind of screened to make sure that they're the kind of people who could actually benefit from our program. And pretty much everybody just comes in, sure, you're fine. Also, to make sure that the volunteer's motive is proper. Of course, we don't want anybody who's a secret journalist or something coming in who is going to be, you know, exposing it to the media everything that they learn while they're with community tasks. So confidentiality, of course, is a big factor. Confidentiality for the volunteers. Correctional Services of Canada has lots of rules. For example, volunteers only use their first names. They don't give out their addresses or phone numbers. When we do things with guys, we always make sure that it's kind of like two volunteers doing things together. And confidentiality runs both ways, of course. Whatever you hear when you're at Open Door, if you know about some guy's history or whatever, you don't spread it out to the world. You know, what happens at Open Door kind of stays at Open Door. If you want to tell your classmates about what a great experience this is and invite them to come, sure, yes. But let's not talk about personal stories that we learn about with these guys. And of course, there's the belief that everybody is redeemable. If people are given a chance, they can redeem themselves. And we also have to look at, I suppose it's the media that really teaches us that everything is black and white. There are no gray areas. You're either an angel or a devil. So if you've done time, then you must be the devil. No, let's look at all the gray areas that happen in life. We are guided by the principles of restorative justice, which means that we're not focused on punishment, which is what our current Canadian criminal justice system is about. It's about punishment. It's about retribution. It's about who's the guilty party, what laws have been broken. Whereas we are guided by the principles of restorative justice, which is, who has been harmed here? Why did this crime take place? How can we make restitution to the victim? How can we restore the community to something, to what it was before the crime took place? Or how can we restore the community to something better than it was before the crime took place? What is it that caused crime to take place? Well, generally there's poverty, there's exclusion, there's crappy childhoods, all sorts of things. There's systemic racism, there's systemic marginalization, and these things cause crime. And so together, we can make the community a better place. And it really is the responsibility of the entire community to help eradicate crime, to help make things better so that people don't commit crimes. It's not just a matter of police, judges, cops, and prison staff. No, everybody is responsible to make sure that we have a society without crime. It's going to be, you know, exposing to the media everything that they learn while they're with community tasks. So confidentiality, of course, is a big factor. Confidentiality for the volunteers. Correctional Services of Canada has lots of rules. For example, volunteers only use their first names. They don't give out their addresses or phone numbers. When we do things with guys, we always make sure that it's kind of like two volunteers doing things together. And confidentiality runs both ways, of course. Whatever you hear when you're at Open Door, if you know about some guy's history or whatever, you don't spread it out to the world. You know, what happens at Open Door kind of stays at Open Door. If you want to tell your classmates about what a great experience this is and invite them to come, sure, yes, but let's not talk about personal stories that we learn about with these guys. And of course, there's the belief that everybody is redeemable. If people are given a chance, they can redeem themselves. And we also have to look at, I suppose it's the media that really teaches us that everything is black and white. There are no gray areas. You're either an angel or a devil. So if you've done time, then you must be the devil. No, let's look at all the gray areas that happen in life. We are guided by the principles of restorative justice, which means that we're not focused on punishment, which is what our current Canadian criminal justice system is about. It's about punishment. It's about retribution. It's about who's the guilty party, what laws have been broken. Whereas we are guided by the principles of restorative justice, which is, who has been harmed here? why did this crime take place? How can we make restitution to the victim? How can we restore the community to something, to what it was before the crime took place? Or how can we restore the community to something better than it was before the crime took place? What is it that caused crime to take place? Well, generally there's poverty, there's exclusion, there's crappy childhoods, all sorts of things. There's systemic racism, there's systemic marginalization, and these things cause crime. And so together we can make the community a better place. And it really is the responsibility of the entire community to help eradicate crime, to help make things better so that people don't commit crimes. It's not just a matter of police, judges, cops, and prison staff. No, everybody is responsible to make sure that we have a society without crime.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. Just a reminder that CKUT is in the middle of our annual funding drive, and we need your support to make sure that we're here for another year. The Prison Radio Show is a critical way of communicating with folks inside prison and ensuring that news relevant to their experiences gets covered. PRS is proud to be part of a long history of prison radio, and CKUT is the ideal host for this project. You can show your support by donating. No amount is too small. You can donate via phone by calling 514-907-9424 or visit us online at ckut.ca/donate. Now, here's the next part of our interview with Jerry, coordinator of Open Door, as she shares about the group's 20th anniversary. What does, when you're integrating new volunteers or new members in from whatever background, how do you help people understand restorative justice? Like how do you bring people into that train of thinking?
I suppose it's just by the way that we break down any kind of barriers between them. Like I say, when you come to Open Door, you don't know who's who. You don't know if you're talking to a currently incarcerated person or if you're talking to a McGill student. So it's the everybody is the same. Everybody is in this. A lot of our people that come to us, our volunteers, will come to us and they think that reintegration is a really structured thing. Mm-hmm. Like in the book, some of our volunteers were saying that I thought it was going to be really formal and structured. And they come to us and they say, it's not formal and structured at all. It's really actually just kind of people supporting people mm-hmm. without a lot of structure. Mm-hmm. It's treating everybody with respect and dignity and treating them about with how are you right now? Not what's the worst thing you did in your life 20 years ago. No, who are you right now? Are you a nice guy right now? Do I trust you right now? Do I think you're being honest right now? How's the conversation going right now?
Yeah, and I think that probably can feel really cathartic for people, especially because the prison environment is so, so highly structured. And sort of there's this idea that people will go through different highly structured programs as part of their sentencing. And I think it is probably really relieving to be able to be part of something like Open Door, where there's a little bit, there's sort of containment, but there's less rigid structure for people to build relationships.
And Open Door is from 7 to 9 every night, or not every night, every Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And the last half hour between 8:30 and 9, after the guest speakers finish talking or after we finished our activity, the last half hour is completely unstructured time. And that's where people can get together and chat. And this is really important for the inmates, for example, as you say, because everything inside of a prison is so structured. And here's a time when they can just hang out and they can talk to ordinary people, which is what, you know, you don't find in a prison system. Everybody is a parole officer. Everybody is a guard. Everybody is a warden. Everybody is something, something. Everybody is paid to be there to manage your life. But at Open Door, everybody is just there to support you. And they say that one of the hardest things about being incarcerated is to know that society no longer wants you, that they've excluded you, that they've thrown you out. And when these guys come to Open Door and they realize that there are people there who are there voluntarily, who are there to support them and to help them into their reintegration, it's the best feeling. And volunteers, when they come to us and they say, okay, well, I'd like to do volunteer work with ex-offenders, they come to Open Door and they, you know, participate in the activity and they chat with these guys afterwards and they say to me afterwards, well, this isn't volunteer work. I'm not doing anything. I'm just like hanging around and chit-chatting. And I say, you have to understand how important it is that you are here for the guys, that your presence is so important for them, because they've been excluded for so long. They may have been excluded for 5 or 10 or 15 or 40 years, and now they're included, and that's really important. So, you know, maybe you're not, you know, serving up meals at a soup kitchen or something, but your presence here is really making a difference for these guys. It really gives them a boost of confidence that when they get out, there will be people there supporting them.
It's amazing that Open Door has been running with such consistency for 20 years. And I wonder if you have ideas about what's made the group so resilient and has helped people sort of stay involved in a long-term way.
Yeah, Open Door has been going for 20 years now. In the early days, I was always pessimistic. And I had a professor at university who used to always say, if Rome can fall, so can this. And I thought, okay, well, maybe Open Door will last for about 6 years and then something will happen politically and or there'll be some kind of a casualty that causes it to fall. But no, it's been going for 20 years. And I think one of the things that keeps it going is that our programming is so interesting, and I try to make it interesting for not just the inmates, but also for the volunteers. And so we have guest speakers from every facet of the community who come and speak to us. And the topic, this is different for Open Door. I think this makes you Open Door unique, is that the topic of the evening is always a surprise. Nobody knows in advance what we're going to talk about. And I've never seen that with other groups. Every group advertises its roster of speakers. So this is what you're going to get in September, October, November, December. And then people look at the group, the speakers, and they say, oh, this one looks interesting. Oh, that one looks boring. Oh, this one looks interesting. That one looks boring. And then they edit themselves out as a consequence. And then they don't grow because they're only reinforcing their current interests. Whereas people come to Open Door not just for the human warmth, which is probably one of the main things, but they also come for the surprise, and they never know what's going to go on. And they just like, wow, I never thought that, like, inmates coming and they see the topic is feminism. Well, okay, boys, you're going to sit here and you're going to learn about feminism tonight. And so often a light will go off in somebody's head. It's just like, wow, I didn't realize that this topic was like this or this or this. And so it's almost a little bit like Christmas. Every yeah. week there's a surprise, and people will come for the surprise every week.
I didn't know your programming was a surprise. I am delighted by that piece of information. And I can totally imagine why it would feel sort of like a hook, especially if you go to one and you have one of those moments where you have like a great sort of learning spark and you're like, wow, I didn't know that. And then you're going to want to keep going back because it feels so good to learn something new and be exposed to something new. Do you take suggestions for topics or for guest speakers?
Oh, always, always. I have to fill up 51 of these nights a year. So I'm always looking for guest speakers. And there will be one of our volunteers who comes up to me and says, you know, I used to work in South America in this really interesting agricultural co-op, and I'd like to do a presentation on it. I say, oh, I'll get out my schedule. I've always got the schedule with me, right? I just pull out the schedule. Or somebody will tell me, oh, you know, I used to be a manure analyst for the Department of Agriculture. Really? We've never had anybody talk to us about manure at Open Door. Well, I'll sign you up. Somebody will talk about their travels. Somebody will say, I have a friend who's doing a PhD in aquatic science or whatever. And just the whole A to Z, as they say, from Abacus to Zeus, or even beyond.
Do you have a, I mean, you've coordinated so many presentations. I wonder if there's like a particular favorite or one that's really stuck with you.
Wow, one that's really stuck with me. Many of them have really stuck with me. We had one guy from the United Nations who was talking to us about the growth of cities in the 21st century. And that was really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. Or a doctor who talked to us about tropical diseases and how to keep yourself from getting parasites in tropical countries. We've had Innovation Youth who's talked to us, and that's, they work with preventative justice, helping troubled kids before they get into trouble. You know, kids who are really kind of maybe at risk of falling through the cracks. And so we love to have them. Let's see, we've had advertising executives talking to us about, you know, the psychology of advertising. We've had hairdressers. We've had funeral officiants.
Wow.
I can't go through however many we've had. And then I've done tons as well. If I don't have a guest speaker for the evening, or if there's no topic, then it comes onto my shoulders. So I also have to be prepared to do something.
Ready with a surprise lecture at a moment's notice.
Exactly. It has to be up to the high standard of Open Door. Young filmmakers. Mm. We have young artists. We have young movers and shakers, activists.
That's cool.
Name it.
I wonder, one of the things I really like to understand about groups, especially groups that have been able to maintain for a long time, is if you have any sort of like, that can be shared, any sort of like rituals or celebration practices or like routines that really like help get everybody together, or in the mindset of like, okay, we're here, we're in the room, we're at Open Door, we're ready to start. I don't know if Open Door has anything like that, but I like to ask this question.
Do we ever?
I thought you might.
Open Door itself is one big routine. Like right now, I'm talking to you from Saskatchewan, so I've just asked somebody else, can you lead Open Door for me for the next 4 weeks? And the routine is so strong that anybody can step in and chair the meetings. We get together at 7 o'clock, and there are people who are there early, and they'll do the chairs and tables, and a lot of guys like to do that. They like to feel that they're helpful. And then from 7 o'clock to 7:10, people are just milling around, because if guys come from the penitentiary, they like to have a little bit of a transition time, so that the structure of the penitentiary isn't suddenly replaced by the structure of Open Door. Mm-hmm. We give them 10 minutes to just hang around and mm-hmm. walk around and talk to people. At 7:10, we call to order, and then we have our announcements. And then we have a little spiritual moment. Somebody will talk about something that happened to them during the week, or something that's been on their mind. And then after that, announcements, introductions, we go around the room and everybody just says their first name. If there's a new person, we give them a clap. Yay, all right, Jane's here for the first time. And people say that you can really feel the atmosphere of Open Door as soon as you walk in. One thing that's good about it is it's just a variety of people. Like I said, our volunteers and our clients, I guess if you want to call them clients, our guys are age 20 to 80, and they're everything from didn't finish high school to PhD. They work in every field. So you walk in, and it's a complete variety of people, men, women, street people, you name it. And so everybody walks in, and they say, I fit in here, because everybody is so different.
Yeah.
It's a complete cross-section of society.
Yeah.
So we have our announcements, introductions, spiritual moment. Then we get into the presentation of the evening. That's from 7:30 to 8:30. And then 8:30 to 9:30, the last half hour, is free socializing. That's when we bring out the refreshments and everybody eats and drinks together. And people will come up to the guest speaker and they ask them questions in private, just in case they didn't want to put up their hand in front of the group. So it really is a highly, highly structured activity, but it just feels like Zen. And a lot of our students will say, I have to come to Open Door because it's the place that I can decompress during the week. Mm-hmm. My life is so stressful. Mm-hmm. Come to Open Door and decompress. Mm-hmm. So very structured.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I really like to ask that question because, one, I think for people who are listening who are maybe like, oh, I want to like learn about this group or join or something like that, having a really clear rundown can help like hook people and make them feel excited about it. But also because I think there's really something to learn when groups are able to maintain for something like 20 years. That's really powerful. And it's sometimes it's good to try to understand the secret sauce that's happening of keeping people involved and coming back. And it sounds like Open Door is a really safe place for people to socialize. It sounds really inclusive. And that's so awesome.
Yes, yes. And of course, surprise topic.
Yes, of course. I
wonder. And of course, we also know that we're doing something positive. We are helping these guys to drop their criminal past and to just move into society as a fully contributing member. Mm-hmm. And it's really positive to see that, the work that they put into this.
Yeah. Have you had, it must feel really awesome when you have folks who are involved as inside members who then get parole or get finish their time and then are able to sort of stay involved in some capacity.
Oh, yes, yes. We have guys that will, you know, they'll attend while they're incarcerated, they'll attend for maybe 2 years. Then once after they've come out, they continue to attend Open Door on their own. They're so excited that they get to talk to Open Door. They come to Open Door on their own. They're not escorted by an escort driver. And then they stay with us. And they could stay with us for, let's say, 6 months, and then they move on. Mm-hmm. And they no longer need our support.
Yeah.
And we count that as a success.
Yeah.
Other guys will come and they'll stay with us for 15 years because they continue to need that support. And we also consider that a success. So when a guy moves on and says, I no longer need Open Door. I'm dropping all of my criminal past. I don't want to ever think about what I've done. I'm moving ahead. We consider that a success. When they stay with us, we consider that a success as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's really powerful to be able to see sort of both of these, like people knowing what they need as a strength and as this like successful thing in either direction, being able to move forward without connection and being able to move forward and still be involved.
Yes.
Hi, just a reminder that this week is the CKUT annual funding drive. It takes ongoing support from listeners just like you to make sure our funding runs for another year. CKUT plays news on the air that simply won't be heard anywhere else, and listener support keeps us free from corporate sponsors. Prison Radio Show needs CKUT, and CKUT needs your help. No contribution is too small. For information on how to donate, you can visit us at ckut.ca/donate or call us at 514-907-9424. Thanks so much. Now, let's get back to Prison Radio's interview with Jerry, coordinator of Open Door, as she talks about the group's 20th anniversary. I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about the book.
Ah, the book. Yes, we've just published a book. It came out in December of 2021, and it's called Open Door from the Inside Out. And the 10th anniversary of Open Door in 2011, actually the very first evening of Open Door was September 11th, 2001. It was the day that the Twin Towers came down. So that first evening, people gathered, and there were maybe 8 people there, and they're all just shell-shocked. What happened to the world today? And so we always say, in the middle of bad things, you can always have good things as well. So Open Door started on the night of September 11th. And when we had our 10th anniversary, we were just going so strong, and we had this big gala with a member of parliament who was the keynote speaker, and the Bishop of Montreal who said grace, and the hall was packed. We were bringing out extra chairs and tables at the end. And then we came across the 20th anniversary, and here we are in the middle of a pandemic. Well, how do we celebrate 20 years of Open Door during a pandemic, and we thought, well, okay, we can't get together, so we'll write a book, and we'll celebrate 20 years of Open Door, and a team came together, I think there was 8 of us, and just from our computers at home, we all networked, and we wrote this book. There are about 160 contributors to the book. We went back and we tried to find, you know, as many people as we could from the past. And of course, we only had a tiny, tiny percentage because thousands of people have come through Open Door over the years. But we tried to find as many as we could. We asked them, you know, what has Open Door meant to you? And what have you been doing ever since then? Mm-hmm. So it's actually the goal of the book is to show that Open Door has been supported by a huge variety of people. And the variety that's in the book reflects the variety that we experience at Open Door with our topics and with our people and with the outlooks. And so the book has not just the interviews, but also it features the different segments of Open Door that we have, like the spiritual moment. It goes through the history of incarceration and modern penal philosophy, which is the Archambault Report, which changed Canadian corrections from just mindless punishment to the thought that, you know, rehabilitation is where we should be going. And we talk about our annual picnic every year. We talk about Restorative Justice Week. There's articles on International Prison Justice Day, talking about the Canada Day celebration that we have. We always celebrate Black History Month. We always celebrate Poetry Month. So all these traditional Open Doors that we have are also included in the book. And we're so fortunate that one of our volunteers won a PATHI Fellowship, which is a huge scholarship, to contribute to a community organization. So this volunteer had $10,000 to contribute to a community project.
Wow.
And just as we were saying, well, we want to do this book and we want it to be to the quality of Open Door, how are we going to find the money for this? This new volunteer comes in and says, well, I've got this massive scholarship and I can help you produce the book. So it's an impressive full color. Every page has color photography and it's beautiful. And we were able to afford hardcover.
Wow.
And it really does reflect the impact that Open Door has made to the community over the years with this beautiful, beautiful publication. We're so fortunate. One of our ex-inmates was a graphic designer and did a lovely job designing the book. And we are just so proud of it. It's so fun.
That's such amazing timing that you ended up having a volunteer who had received this funding to help create this really like beautiful, high quality book. That's awesome. For people who are listening who maybe don't have the book in front of them or can't Google it, can you describe what the cover looks like? Because it's really a beautiful cover.
Well, it has largely gray with prison bars, and the gray background looks like a concrete wall with graffiti on it. So you think that that's what a person's cell would look like a graffiti written on a concrete wall, and then you see prison bars, and then there's a door in the middle of it. It's opened up and it opens up to a beautiful blue sky with a couple of little white clouds, and it's called Open Door from the Inside Out. And then there's a little red band at the top that says 20 years. So we're happy about that.
It's so awesome. I wonder if, like, thinking about the last 20 years, 10 years, you just finished this like monumental project. Are there sort of hopes or direction for the next 5 years of Open Door or foreseeable future?
Oh, wow. For Open Door specifically, or for Communitas in general?
Whichever you want to share.
Well, we are now just at the beginning of opening up again. And so we're really looking forward to meeting some of the people who have been supporting us online for the last 2 years, because we have so many new volunteers that have joined us. We've never met them in person, but they're with us. So it'll be wonderful to start opening up again within the room, because we used to have like 35 people at Open Door every week. And now we have to have like social distancing. So we have to start out with 20 people, and then we'll gradually get back to the way we were, we hope, and get back to table talk so that we can have our Friday lunch. And what else? We've always had the dream of having like a house where guys can live, where ex-inmates can come out and live. That's a big dream. But you know, at Communitas, everything we've ever tried, we've done it successfully. We've never tried to build a house. house or buy a house mm-hmm. or create a house mm-hmm. for guys. But if we did, we'd do it successfully because our volunteers are so committed and we have such a diversity of talents. And you don't get any harder workers than ex-inmates. You know, like these guys, if you've been sitting in a prison cell for 5 years and all you can think about is wanting to do things, wanting to help to contribute to the community again, wanting to prove yourself, these guys come out and they work, man. Yeah, the best people I've ever had on my committees or whatever have always been ex-inmates. They just go the extra mile. They are such hard workers. They're so diligent. And so we have a really good community to work from. So, yeah, we're going to have to kind of our traditional funding has been cut. And, you know, Correctional Service of Canada used to fund us through community chaplaincy. And then the COSA project comes to the end, comes to an end in 11 days. And so the traditional funding that we've had is all drying up, which is why in, 2015, 2016, we incorporated and we became a registered charity so that we would be able to, you know, give tax receipts for donations and we would be able to go to foundations and we would be able to do our own fundraising, not dependent on government handouts or anything like that. And so it took us a couple of years to incorporate because it's quite an involved process to get charity numbers and board of directors and bylaws and all that stuff. But at that time, we also happened to have a guy who was a PhD in law who happened to drop in as a volunteer, and he walked us through the whole process of incorporation. So whatever we want, we kind of find the resources, and whatever we put our mind to, we do it, and we do it well. We're not the sexiest organization out there. You know, like helping inmates is probably not as well seen as, you know, helping people with disabilities, or, I mean, a lot of people have preconceived notions of, well, okay, if somebody committed a crime, it's, you know, they should be in jail and serves them right. And a lot of people, of course, they don't think about inmates reintegrating. They think about, okay, once he's been sentenced and he's gone into prison, it's done. Well, no, actually 99% of inmates, they come back into the community and they become your neighbors. They become the people sitting by you on the bus. They become the person who's working at the store with you. So reintegration is really important. I don't know where I was going with this, which is what I usually do.
I think you've done a great job of naming some of the major goals. It sounds like readjusting to figure out where your funding and supports will come from will be a challenge, but Open Door and Communitas in general sounds like a really resilient group that's been able to maintain focus on building relationships with people who have done time, which is such a marginalizing experience. And it seems like you're really able to be guided by that value and by the value of breaking isolation.
Mm-hmm. And also networking with other community groups is going to be really important in the future.
I guess just as we're sort of wrapping up, I wonder if there's anything I haven't asked about or we haven't touched on that you'd like to have mentioned.
Well, I mean, if anybody wants to get a copy of the Open Door book, you can just go onto our website, communitasmontreal.org. And we don't have a lot of copies left because we printed it and people just flocked to it. And then we have our limited edition hardcover, and those are half gone as well. So people can go onto our website and they can look for the book and they can get themselves a copy. What else? And go onto our website and look at what we do and see if you'd like to drop in. We're a very kind of laid-back organization, and you can check us out and like us or not like us. And Open Door, the attendance at Open Door is not compulsory. You know, if we see you once every 2 months or if we see you once every 8 months, we welcome you. Hey, it's not like a group where you have to be there every week. No. You come whenever you have a Tuesday night free. And if we haven't seen you for 2 years, man, you're going to get a huge clapping when you come back to Open Door. So we're a laid back organization, but it seems to work.
It certainly sounds like it does. And I've met a lot of folks who really love Open Door and have had really positive experiences there. So it's really been wonderful to chat with you and hear the inside scoop. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening to today's interview with Jerry, host of Open Door. As she mentioned, you can get more information on Open Door and Communitas's programming in general by visiting their website at communitasmontreal.org. That's spelled out CommunitasMontreal.org, or by calling them at 514-244-6147. As usual, today we'll close out with a brief news segment. And today we have some good news to share. This reporting comes from our comrades at itsgoingdown.org. On March 19th, a jury acquitted anti-racist and anti-fascist political prisoner Eric King on the count of assaulting an officer. The Civil Liberties Defense Center said that they are overjoyed at a not guilty verdict and the implication it can have for other political prisoners who are wrongfully charged. As always, March 15th was the International Day Against Police Brutality. Protests were held in cities across so-called Canada, linking together police violence, racism, and the colonial aggression of the Canadian state. Prison Radio Show stands in solidarity with protesters, prisoners, and those with lived experience of police violence. Closing out our show, we'll remind you that it's CKUT's annual funding drive this week. Prison Radio has been on CKUT for over a decade, and we plan to continue being on the air, but we'll need your support to do so. You can find out more about making a donation by visiting ckut.ca/donate or by calling CKUT at 514-907-9424. Funds help us pay our bills, get high-quality gear and equipment, cover the cost of training and workshops, and keep the creation of new projects happening. CKUT would not exist without listener support, and Prison Radio wouldn't be on the air without them. Thanks so much. The next Prison Radio episode will be on April 14th from 5 to 6 p.m., that's a Thursday, and Friday, April 29th from 11 to noon. The final voice on this show will remind you how you can get in touch. We want to hear from you. We want your pitches and suggestions. Thanks for listening. Talk soon.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number. You weren't a name. I wasn't Jim Crow. And hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
Yeah.
Dash all the way from Grenada and they tune in to C-Cut 90.3 FM.
I went to residential school. I was just 8 years old.
Gayla Kasla. My name is Gennarji O'Sullivan of the Tlaalitsis Nation, originally from Turner Island. You're listening to Wendell exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools.
Jason Whitebear is one of our youngest panelists. He is a residential school survivor.
Gaki Waku Maganak, Nadi, Nwendin Naganag. How Mataki was. I said all my relations in three different languages. Those languages were taken away and given with this one here that I've mastered in residential school. And they told me that once you go there, he says, you're not going to come home with this anymore. You're not going to come home being able to speak Nehewewen. You're not going to be able to speak. But when you do go, what I want you to do is I want you to try and master everything that they give you so that they can never fool us anymore. In my generation, we're at the point now where we understand the nuances between the languages. We can say, bonjour, Anin. I wish I knew a little bit of Arab, but you know, the point being is that we're all sitting around here and we're very learned people. We're very knowledgeable. We know how to say to say a little bit of each other's language nowadays, and that's just us as this language, as this. And I think that's a direct result of residential school, is because we always ask each other, "Where are you from? Well, how do you say this? How do you say that?" So that when you run into somebody else, you're allowed to respect them and say "Tanse, how, wuju anin." So regardless of what was taken away from me during my residential school formative years, I haven't lost the ability to see. And so it is with this that I thank each and every one of you. I'd like to say, Ninanaskamon Gakyogi Gwayotsiwa Taaski, and that's Cree for I'm grateful for everything in this land. I had to learn that from a kukum, because I was speaking in front of chiefs one time and I said, I can't speak the language. So she taught me that little bit. Thank you.
You have just heard At Window exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools. Both my mother and I attended St. Michael's Residential School in Alert Bay, BC. This is a part of a larger project called Resonating Reconciliation that engages community radio as a tool to help define what reconciliation is. Resonating Reconciliation is meant to help reconcile all Canadians to this shared history. This is the work of the National Campus and Community Radio Association, the Rajam Slam Society, and this station. Resonating Reconciliation is also supported by the Indian Residential School Survivor Society and is funded by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. To hear more, go to www.ncra.ca/resonating.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional student and community productions in and around Montreal, on an island we also known as Tuchage in Ganiagahaga and Muniang in Anishinaabe, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, July 14th, 2022. On tonight's show, my guests, Fringe Circuit veteran Rochelle Ely on her pivot from clown to comedy.
I used to want to go to LA and New York, and now I don't. I mean, if I go, it's to visit, but I want to work close to where I love being, which is in Canada. So I'm kind of focusing on Quebec for that reason.
Crafting intimate.